Welcome to your Right to Speak discussions on social justice and advocacy. This is episode 24. I'm your host, Salvatore. Jen will not be with us today, so hopefully we can have you back next episode. Today we'll be talking about relational approach and the importance of it with Vanessa, who works with Ian from our last episode. Vanessa, would you like to introduce yourself?
Sure, thank you. So my name is Vanessa Lackridge. I am a child and youth care practitioner. I've been working in the field for about 10 years. A bit about my background, I guess. I've done the diploma program in child and youth work, and I've also done the degree program in the child and youth care program at Ryerson. I've worked in various sectors with youth experiencing homelessness, within children's mental health, in residential treatment. So I'm excited to talk a bit more about the relational approach because I think it is essential in our work. So that's a bit about me.
Well, I'm very excited for today's episode.
Thank you
for being with us. I guess we're just going to dive right into it. Can you explain what the relational approach is and how it's used with children and youth?
Sure. So I just like to preface that a lot of what I'll speak to is, you know, embedded in my education, but also in my work experience within the field with children, youth, and their families. And because it's such an evolving field, I feel like things are forever changing, but the relational approach sits well with me because I know that this is, as I said, essential in our work. So to me, the relational approach is, it really highlights that we use the relationship as a tool, so as the mechanism to, you know, build some sort of trusting relationship with the young person. And I think, you know, it's the foundation of our work because it all starts there. Oftentimes the young people, we meet them or they come to us and we're, you know, another adult in their life, whereas many of them have experienced, you know, a lot of trauma and abuse at the hands of adults. So, you know, often there's this standoffish, like, who are you, adult person? So I think, you know, this approach is also strength-based, and it's created, and it works in the moment, you know, in the life space of the young people that we work with in their families. And I think what it does is it allows young people to create new experiences within these relationships that may allow them to see things differently or reshape the way they walk through the world, you know, having these new experiences. At least that's the hope.
I think that's, you said a couple of key things that I think are so important is in the moment, which is very much grounded in the child and youth care practice.
Absolutely.
And I hope that, you know, other listeners in social services and my colleagues in policy really understand the importance of living in the moment. Because I think sometimes just bringing it to policy and programs, it doesn't allow for that really.
So
I'm so happy you brought that up. Just for our listeners who may not be aware of like what strength-based is, could you describe that?
Yeah. So strength-based to me means really looking at where the young person, like what are the positive things in the young person's life? What do they have going for them? What can you draw on to highlight as a strength? Because a lot of times the young people don't see these things within themselves, and we work within systems that are often deficit based. Oh, you have these issues, so you are connected to these services. So I feel like strength based is really looking at what are, you know, like their talents, what are they really good at, what have they done to walk through life that highlights and showcases their resiliency, you know. And I think as practitioners, like, it's important to highlight that because they don't hear it. And, and what we know as well is that sometimes it takes, you know, 100 positives to combat that one negative that they've been told over and over and over again in their life.
And it can even be as small as even just like getting out of bed in the morning.
Yes.
right? So I think that's so important, because often I think when we talk about strength-based, mm-hmm. we try to just look at the huge benefits, right? Mm-hmm. We don't really recognize the small things that young people are doing that are really having more impacts on them than sometimes the bigger stuff is.
Absolutely. Because they can't really get to school and focus in the classroom if they don't get out of bed. Exactly. You know, and oftentimes, like, I had a young person yesterday who was extremely anxious, and her mom was able to convince her to come here and accompanied her mm-hmm. here, and I just said to her, I said, you were really brave to come here mm-hmm. today and to face all of these new people and a new program, you know, and you don't always get a response, but I thought it was just important to highlight that it took a lot of courage for mm-hmm. her to do that.
Yeah. And it's very, I guess, reassuring to the young person that, because mm-hmm. sometimes they don't even recognize, you know, some of these strengths, yes. right?
Exactly.
So what would be some of the pros to using this approach over others?
So I think what differentiates a lot of the work that we do as child and youth care practitioners versus within other fields in the social service sector mm-hmm. is, again, we work in the moment with the young people and in their life space. So mm-hmm. I think that this approach is not necessarily separate from, you know, other approaches, interventions, and such. I think that it goes hand in hand because it's the beginning of the work. It's from the moment the young person walks into the space and sees the first face and mm-hmm. how are they greeted, you know. Something that's important to myself and a lot of the people that I work with is, you know, one of the first things is not, let's complete all of this intake paperwork. It's, are you hungry? Do you need something to eat? Can I get you a glass of water? Do you need to just sit for a bit, mm-hmm. you know, versus getting straight into the things? And I think, you know, it's really about meeting the young people where they're at. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So how do we, because we've mentioned meeting them where they're at a couple of times, mm-hmm. how do we meet a young person where they're at?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think meeting them where they're at is, could be the physically where they're at, like maybe mm-hmm. it's in their home versus our expectation to, right. you know, come into an office, which is often what like more formal counseling looks like. You know, it's the young person who can't get out of bed to make it to school. We're not the person to put the pressure on them, you know, oh, you're failing, mm-hmm. you need to get this working. It's okay, you can't get out of bed and you need support. That's where we're starting, you know, or a young person who is struggling to find work because they're so insecure about their clothing that they don't have to be, you know, this professional yes. to go. So it's yeah. like, I'm going to meet you where you're at. Like, let's figure out getting you clothes first. Mm-hmm. Let's figure out getting you housing first. You know, it's, I think it's really like what the young person identifies as their need. And I think because oftentimes as professionals, I feel like we always want the best for them. We want to see them succeed. And one of those indicators is like graduating high school. That's a big education is significant in our hopes for these mm-hmm. guys, that sometimes that's not what's priority for them. It's I need to work so that I can help get my mom medication so, you know, she can treat her illnesses.
Right. So it's really looking at different aspects of their life mm-hmm. and really understanding, I guess, what's important or more important to the young person.
Yeah.
And what we need to do as practitioners to, I guess, work with them to meet their goals.
Absolutely.
I often find that, you know, sometimes just in general, practitioners kind of get lost in mm-hmm. doing their job and mm-hmm. saying, you know, we have this like plan of care, let's say, and we have to meet those goals yeah. and you have to do that. And we, you know, the meeting where they're at kind of gets lost within that. How do you think, and I know I'm getting a bit off topic, but how do you think we can put that more into, I guess, programming or maybe training new practitioners?
Mm-hmm. Sorry, just to clarify. So we're looking at how we can incorporate some of the, I guess, like, requirements of, like, programs into something that's not as formal?
Right. So, kind of like, so sometimes the programming can allow a practitioner to be very rigid in their work, right? Mm-hmm. And so the whole theory behind meeting where they're at kind of gets lost in that rigid programming.
Yeah.
How can, I guess what I'm saying is, how can, like, programs be developed to really foster and promote more of meeting where they're at?
Mm-hmm. That's a great question. I think one of the places that my head immediately goes to is having these programs be voluntary. I worked in a residential setting where there were various programs, programming, like arts programming, life skills-based programming, and you know, while the expectation was that they were to attend, they weren't grounded or, like, penalized in any way for not attending. And I feel like that's an example of meeting them where they're at. Because sometimes, like, we know with young people, the social interaction with your friend at school is a lot more important than coming back to staff to do programming. So I think making it voluntary is optional. And I think, like, the youth engagement approach is really important, and you know, I think it starts with dialogue with the young people around, like, what are they interested in, what do they want. And I think what I love about youth engagement is that we're helping young people get to the forefront of these programs where they're able to then run them on their own. Like, imagine how powerful that would be if within a treatment setting you had a young person facilitating or even co-facilitating a group.
Yeah, you're totally speaking my language. That's where my whole, I guess, like, undergrad and graduate studies research area has been, is youth engagement and the right to participation, really. So I'm told you're preaching to the choir here.
It's great.
Totally agree. But I think sometimes, you know, with that, and what I found in my research too, is that adults kind of think they know better than, you know, the young person. And we really, I guess, as practitioners, sometimes can't foster or really, you know, get our heads around a young person. Let's, it's maybe a radical idea, but a young person developing addictions programs, right? Or any other type of service like that. So I really, I mean, you're speaking to the choir here, but I really think, I don't know what you think, but, like, adults need to, I guess, look beyond their stereotypes of, like, what childhood and what a youth is and what that means and what capabilities, you know, a young person really has.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I think it's this, the idea of doing with and not for. And also, I think it's really important, like, you know, despite our education, despite our experiences, you know, we're all on our own journey and on our own path. And I think what some practitioners, if I may, need to understand is that these young people are the experts in their own lives. Like, up until the point that they've met with us, we've crossed paths, you know, it could be the young person experiencing homelessness on the street who I may stop and talk to. Like, up until that point, they've done what they needed to do to survive in this world. And oftentimes they come into these clinical settings and, you know, we deem these behaviors as maladaptive. And while we understand that there are various risks, I think that, you know, it's still part of the young person's resiliency, whereas they learn to make it work for themselves.
Yeah, no, I think it's a very important point. I'm just going to kind of reel us back in, because we went a little bit off topic because of me. What would you say could be some of the gaps to using a relational approach? Or are there any gaps?
Okay. I think that there are, I would say there are challenges to using a relational approach. I think some things that you encounter in these relationships may be, like, issues around boundaries. How do you navigate that, especially when you're now coming into the field and you're close age, you know, your age is, you're 2 years older or the same age as the young people. I know a lot of students that I've worked with, supervised, taught, experience some of these issues. And then we're also looking at, you know, transference and counter-transference, and how does that play into the individual relationships that we have with the young people. Yeah, and I think Another challenge that I've heard a lot about is like friends and colleagues who have worked within settings where the relational approach isn't first. That's mm-hmm. not the intervention. Like there's a focus on like solely like the medical model mm-hmm. or maybe like within a youth justice detention center, yeah. you may not be able to build and foster a relationship with the young person because there are other things that, you know, precede right. that. However, I'm still an advocate for the relational approach. Yeah.
So you mentioned that you have supervised and taught new CYC practitioners mm-hmm. on the relational approach and like talked about some of these gaps. So what would, I guess, one advice be to a new practitioner who is maybe facing boundary issues or is facing that age, I don't want to call it an issue, but issue.
Yeah, I think that education comes first, mm-hmm. right? Because I can remember myself being new in the field and walking into the youth shelter and having a young person, you know, kind of make a very like, I'm gonna hit on you comment, and I was like, oh my god, how do I navigate this? Yeah. I'm really young, he's older than me. You know, so I can relate to that feeling of respect that you, it's coming from a place where you actually don't know how to navigate mm-hmm. some of this. So I think the education comes first, and talking about it and processing. I think, you know, self-reflection is important in the field, but also using supervision. I think one thing that I was told in the field when I started was, you know, especially around boundaries, you always go in firmer, like be very strict and then lighten up, you know, because mm-hmm. if you go in very like, oh, like nonchalant, when you're like, okay, guys, it's time to do your chore, they're going to be like, screw you. Yeah. You're just a student staff, you know, yeah. like, so I think that really looking at what boundaries are and maybe giving examples of some of the things that can come up. Some of the things that often puzzle students is how do I navigate how old are you, or how do I navigate where do you live, what high school did you go to, do you have a partner, have you ever smoked cigarettes, have you ever smoked marijuana, you know, some of those things I think are things that students have come to me and said, I don't know how to answer these questions. So I think opening dialogue and also having a setting like a seminar where their peers can respond to how they've addressed these
right.
issues is helpful.
So often, you know, we've had in CYC education, you know, those huge discussions on boundaries and what that looks like. And, you know, I've had some past professors say that a lot of work that CYCs do is in the gray. Mm-hmm. And so I can see how complicated, I guess, for a new practitioner to really, how do you navigate? Because you are right, you do have to be kind of strict and set those ground rules from the beginning in some settings. But then you also, you know, in the gray is where really, I guess, we really can connect with a young person. Mm-hmm. That's where, like, the real work can be done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, the gray zone. Yeah. yeah, because you know what? Things aren't black and white. And it's, I think for me at this point in my career, I can acknowledge that it's taken time to not only understand the work, understand different, you know, intervention modalities and ways of working, but also understanding myself better. Mm-hmm. And I think piece of that is, you know, what are you comfortable sharing? What are you not comfortable sharing? And a lot of times I've heard students been told, they're told, share as little as possible. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think, you know, bringing it back to the relational approach, when you start working with a young person and you end up working with them for 1 or 2 years, you know, there may be more comfort in the relationship if they're like, hey, Vanessa, can I have a hug? I'm like, yeah, sure. Like,
yeah.
Here's a hug. You know, but then you get into other, you know, when we're talking about gaps and challenges, other settings where there's no touch policies, mm-hmm. right? So I think it also depends on the setting, where you are, where you're working, where you're placed, to kind of determine how boundaries look.
Yeah,
you
yeah.
know, sometimes there's no, you know, if you're working in a detention center, you may have young people who are like, locked up or something, yeah. so it can be challenging.
I think that's a good
point. Hope that answers the question.
No, it does. It does. I'm just going to skip down a little bit. Let's see here. Okay, so often, you know, me and Jen have found that most approaches kind of have that one size fits all,
mm-hmm.
right? So something like CBT mm-hmm. is really a one size fits all.
Mm-hmm.
How does the relational approach really take into consideration like culture, race, ethnicity, mm-hmm. Gender, you know, all those elements?
Yeah, and the intersectionality of life,
yes,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think again, like, and I know this sounds repetitive, but, you know, it's really meeting them where they're at.
Mm-hmm.
And, again, I think it is important for the practitioner to, you know, operate knowing that the young people, again, are the experts, and they know what they need better than we know what they need at any point in time. The only question I would say, the only way I would question that is around safety, because that's something that sometimes we do have to intervene.
Right.
So I think it's important to highlight that. But I think as a practitioner, it's okay to be curious and ask questions. You know, we're going to meet young people who we don't know how to work with them. We don't know where they're coming from.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know how you ended up in front of me today. You know, so why not explore that? And I think also sometimes we need to self-reflect, like maybe even do some research, for example, around like traditions and customs. Like maybe I don't know how to work within this young person's home who's from this particular culture. So how do I, you know, I feel like I said at the beginning, it's an evolving field, and I feel like we continue to grow as practitioners mm-hmm. as well. So how do we, you know, expand our minds and you know, add to our toolbox, so to speak.
So in a sense, it's really kind of even adding the, I don't know if you've heard this term, cultural humility.
Yes.
So it's kind of, I like when you're talking, I'm thinking, oh, it'd be great to add in cultural humility with mm-hmm. the relational approach, right? Because mm-hmm. on top of like, yeah, you have to research about a culture, but then the individual experiences, let's say their culture very differently to what the majority may be experiencing it as, right? So I can just see the relational approach matching so nicely with that, because mm-hmm. it's really, I mean, when I think of relational, I think of individualized,
absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely, yeah. And I think part of the humility is like the being humble
mm-hmm.
and accepting and even articulating to the young people, I don't know.
Yeah.
It is okay to say that. The amount of times I've struggled and tried to figure it out in my head and in the moment, and I'm like, Vanessa, I'm like, own it. I'm like, you know what? I really don't know. Like, let's try to figure this out together, or let's find somebody who can help you.
I'm so happy you said that. I was waiting for you to say that. Because it is important. I mean, we cannot, as practitioners, pretend that we are the experts in everything. And right? So I think it's important, especially using the relational approach, mm-hmm. to admit that you don't know.
Yeah, absolutely. And also, we're human, too.
Yeah.
Sometimes I've been in situations where I articulate to the person, like, what you did hurt me,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I'm also sure that we can repair this relationship, you know, but I think we have feelings and emotions too, and if we walk through the world and our work kind of like robotic, and mm-hmm. our young people think that we can take everything and do everything and we know everything, like, I think that's kind of harmful, you know, because oftentimes we are looked to as role models and mentors, and they also need to know that we're human too, and sometimes we make mistakes.
I'm so happy you said that. So how would I guess we touched upon this a bit, but I don't know if you can say it in more detail. How would we put this approach into practice?
Mm-hmm.
And after you answer that question, what is the one piece of advice you can give new CYCs using this approach?
Sure. So I think in terms of putting this approach into practice, it all begins from the moment you meet the young person. Mm-hmm. Sometimes from that phone call inquiry around, hey, what do you offer in terms of services? Do you have a bed? You know, I think it starts there, and a lot of the pieces that we talked about, you know, the young person is aware of what they need. How can we inquire, ask questions, be curious? You know, how can we do things like be consistent and reliable? Mm-hmm. You know, how I think if follow through is important for young people, you know, and follow through can create trust, and not following through can create more distrust. And we've talked about, you know, the distrust that a lot of these young people have for adults. So I think how to put the approach into practice is a really big question, but hopefully some of what we've talked about is helpful in terms of what it may look like. And a piece of advice, I would say, like, keep it real. The young people can see through when you're not being genuine, and they will call you on it. And I think something I value in my work is being transparent. You know, obviously we are bound by things like confidentiality, and we adhere to those things, but I think be transparent as much as you can. Mm-hmm. Let the young people know, make them part of the decision. Why are we deciding what happens for them? Mm-hmm. Let's do it with them.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my ears are ringing. So we're near the end, and I'm going to ask you, I guess it's become our trademark question. What does advocacy mean to you?
So this is another really big question. So this, I will speak from like my experience and understanding. But I think advocacy is really, like I mentioned, doing with, and sometimes for when the support is needed. And I think it's, you know, finding ways to support the young people, and, you know, asking yourself questions like, how can their voices be heard? How do we promote this? How do I put them out there so that people listen to what they have to say, because they have so much to say that can really shape the way we do things, the way systems operate, like an educational institution, you know. I think part of advocacy and my work is helping young people navigate systems and find and gain access to resources, because there are many things out there and sometimes we don't know. So sometimes it's going on my friend Google and kind of seeing what's out there, or like, you know, networking in the field, calling our colleagues and helping, you know, find stuff for these young people. And I think also being a voice within these systems, like, for example, within like a school or a treatment setting, you know, to ensure that their needs are being met and also that their rights are being adhered to. So I think for me, that's a lot of what advocacy looks like, and then we can get into the bigger like policy and stuff. And I'm still learning a lot about that. So, yeah, I think I would sum that up with advocacy.
I think it's a good way of summing it up.
Cool.
So we're about to end. Is there any last words that you want to say for the listeners?
Oh, you put me on the spot.
Oh, sorry.
I think I would say that there are really great pieces of work out there that we can continue to like read and refresh ourselves with. You know, I feel like connecting with our colleagues and like engaging in things like trainings, like keeping ourselves up to date is important. Like, how are the laws changing? How does that impact and affect the young people? Yeah, I think those are all important pieces.
I think that's a great way to end. Your right to speak will be posted on the second Wednesday of every month. Thank you again, Vanessa, for taking the time out to speak with me today. It was a great conversation. I loved
Thank
it.
You.
If you are a child or youth that would like to be on the show, or if you have an idea of any topics we should be talking about, you can email me and Jen at yourrighttospeak@gmail.com. That's yourrighttospeak@gmail.com. Let's raise awareness together.
This concludes this month's episode of CYC Podcast. Tune in next time for more discussions on child and youth care. Subscribe to us on iTunes or Stitcher. Visit us on our website at cycpodcast.org. Follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/cycpodcast.